welcome to KSL Cafecito, the podcast where we talk all things culture over some nice cafecito. I'm Yvette Cruz.
And I'm Joel Carreras.
And today we're talking privilege, the higher education system, and navigating it as a first-generation college student. This stemming from the college cheating scandal that broke last week, in which about 50 people, including some Hollywood stars, were charged in a scam where wealthy parents allegedly bribed college coaches and other insiders to get their kids into some of the nation's best schools. Joining us to talk about this today is Cristobal Villegas, a first-generation college student who just graduated from the University of Utah with a master's. Congratulations, by the way, and welcome.
Gracias.
Okay, guys, so this story shocked a lot of people and didn't shock a lot of other people because it seems no surprise that rich people use their money to get what they want, legally or not. Am I right? But rather than just focus on this scandal, one of the things that really stood out to me when the news broke was the community of first-generation college students who came out online and shared their experiences and how proud they were not only of how they got to where they got, but the fact that they didn't have any help and still manage to succeed. So today in this episode, I want to highlight that experience. And so Cristobal, we'll start with you. What was your path to college like? And what was the financial situation like? And how did you react to this whole cheating scandal when you found out about it?
Yeah, first of all, well, thank you for inviting me to come over here and talk about this. Like, I'm really excited. And back to your question. Yeah, navigating, you know, college is a mountain. My mom is from Mexico. My dad's from El Salvador. And I'm the oldest out of six siblings. I remember, like, after I think it was sixth grade, my parents wouldn't be able to help me with school anymore, right? My math, my English, my sciences. They were like, I don't know, mijo, you know, you go take care of it by yourself. So from that moment on, even just navigating K through 12 and then post, it was a challenge. All these forms, this financial aid that people talk about, application fees for this and for that. Like, I didn't know what to do. So for me, navigating and applying to school, it was a challenge in and of itself. Educating my parents, letting them know, hey, papa, mama, I can't work 100% because I got to take care of my studies and I got to get ready for the exam coming up. But they're like, mijo, I think you can do all these things. I'm like, okay, well, I'll do my best what I can, you know?
Yeah. What about you, Shaw?
For me, as far as when I first heard about the news, that didn't shock me. It reminded me back of my days working at my alma mater and hearing stories about how certain people would be getting into certain programs and et cetera. There's one program at my alma mater that is really competitive to get to, and you would hear stories about how certain parents were trying to get their sons and daughters into this program that is still one of their more sought after programs. I won't name it, but it didn't necessarily surprise me, but it just kind of continued on this idea of, like, even with the money or even like with the idea of, like, the name, like, whoever, whatever your last name is, that's still not enough. That's still, now you need more. Now you do need the funds to, I hate to say it, but to bribe these people and to get your son or your daughter into it. And as far as my financial situation, kind of like the same situation. I grew up with just my mother. And so, yeah, it reached a certain age as well where it's like, okay, she could only help me so much, but also she was working two jobs at some point. Then she was working her full-time job. And it got tough. So there's a lot of sort of figuring it out on your own. And I think for a lot of us, you know, not just Latinos, Latinas, but a lot of us who maybe grow up a little bit more humbler, if you will, we struggle with it because a lot of times, especially for us first generation college students, since our parents didn't have that experience of figuring out everything, like you had mentioned, from financial aid to even just these upper division kind of classes that were in high school. That's tough. Like, for example, like for my mom, she only got her high school diploma, so she couldn't tell me anything about that. And my mom was probably one of the lucky ones back in Ecuador back in the day who actually finished it, because my mom's the oldest of 11. So she's like the second mom in my family, if you will, of my aunts and uncles. So it's tough for nuestra gente as well, obviously. And I don't know. I think it's sad. And it's something that won't go away. Like, I'm not going to be like saying that it's going to get fixed or now because of this, now, you know, schools are going to start putting better regulation. Like, no, it's still a business. I know people don't want to admit that college is a business.
I think, like, just to go off on his point, these institutions of education aren't built for bodies like us. Right? From the inception of these, you know, universities, they were made for specific people, for specific income levels, and that's it. And so this whole chase of, like, you know, they're trying to be inclusive, they're not. You know, immigrant bodies, black bodies, brown bodies, femme bodies, they're not wanted in institutions. And especially if you don't have money, you're especially not wanted in these institutions.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, money's an issue, you know, but there are scholarships available for people like that. And so, I mean, should there be more available? Obviously, schools want to be inclusive. They say they want to be inclusive. And there are people who want to go to these schools because, like it or not, these schools carry certain weight. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you say, you know, I went to Harvard, that people look at you differently than if you say you went to some school nobody ever heard of. It doesn't mean you're less, but people will see you differently. And so what else can these schools do to let more kids in? And can they... I mean, obviously tuition is a big issue, but what other programs could, I mean, just obviously like your guys' opinion, what other things could be available to students who have the potential to succeed at these schools, but just don't have the means?
It's tough because, I mean, one thing that I can think of from that might help, and I know some schools it has, depends on their alum and maybe their alums begin to work with certain departments and say, I'm an alumnus here, I studied engineering here, so I want to start a scholarship for, you know, whether it's Latino, African American, whoever, students that are going to do engineering like I did as well.
Okay.
And little by little like that, but that's easier said than done, definitely.
Right.
That's a lot of money to start up a scholarship fund. At my alma mater, there was one, a private donor who donated $30,000 every year for students that were, and I believe the scholarship is still around, for undocumented non-resident students. It mm-hmm. was a private scholarship because undocumented non-resident students cannot get financial aid.
Right.
So, and it's tough because we were so dependent on him. And then he did it for about 4 years. But then after that, he said, you know, I think I'm going to invest elsewhere. And what were we going to say? Of course we wanted to say no, but at the same time, he gave up $120,000 over 4 years, in that 4 year span, you know, for students that he never met.
Yeah.
He never would go and you know, God bless the man for it. He never would come to the scholarship awards. He only showed up, I think, 3 times to certain events. And that was it. And nobody really knew, the people that were in charge of it was the committee. And that's great. That's a great story, but that's really far and few. And I don't know. And we would need more of that. But at the same time, yeah, maybe the people that have that amount to give, maybe they're investing in something else. That sounds really bad, but...
They probably are, yeah.
Yeah.
And if I may just go one step further than that, I think I personally believe access to education is a human right. So mm-hmm. if we look from that perspective, just as healthcare is a human right and other are human rights, if we look at this and say, you know, how are these institutions, how can we make it more equitable and justice? It's by assuring, you know, that tuition isn't a burden just to apply for an application fee, you know, that it's, you know, what's a government's, what's society's responsibility to every single member of this community? Do we want an educated populace or do we not? And so I think, and then from there we can stem on to there's differences in different institutions, from Harvard to, let's say, my original school, Utah Valley University. There's definitely differences in prestige, but at the end of the day, it's an education. It's more of what I do with that education, what I do with that certificate, that really depends.
Yeah, right. I agree.
What are your thoughts on, mm-hmm. on this?
So just a little background on my experience or my path to college. I grew up in a single parent household. My mom raised my sister and I, and college was never a question. It was never are you going to college or am I gonna, it was always going to happen no matter what. Whether for two reasons actually. So one was anything that I wanted to do when I grew up, when I was a kid, and I, you know, either wanted to be a lawyer, I wanted to be a teacher, I wanted to be a journalist. It all required a degree. So in that sense, it was never a question that I was going to go to school. But also because my mom always told me that it was a privilege that I was born a U.S. citizen. She's from Mexico, and she always said, you have that privilege. There's no way you're a U.S. citizen and you're not going to get an education. Mm-hmm. She didn't make it past grade school. And I think my mom is a very intelligent woman, and I think she's a very hard worker. But she looks back and she always said she still says this, but she said this growing up. She didn't want my sister and I to end up like her, to go to work and have it be work and not have a career. She wanted us to have a career and not a job or two jobs, because I know at some point she had several jobs. But that was always going to happen. College. Now, how it was going to be paid for, that was something that was tricky. And, you know, it was kind of a taboo, but it was kind of we'll figure it out when it happens. And so And I had to navigate that by myself too. I had to figure out one, you know, FAFSA. I had to learn about what FAFSA was. My mom unfortunately didn't know and couldn't tell me. I had to tell her. And even then, you know, FAFSA pays for so much, and I think it's a great program, but there's so much more that's necessary. Yep. And navigating through that, like, I was lucky enough to, I went to a school that my undergrad, I went to a school that was close to home. So I lived at home for most of it. So I wasn't exactly out on my own, but I was having to pay for school in the sense that I had the grants that I had to use. And I also had to take out loans, and I had to work too, just to like provide for myself. Obviously my mom was providing a roof over my head and, you know, food and all of that. But I had to pay for gas to get to school. I had to pay for, you know, things that I wanted, or books, or I had to pay to be a normal person, I guess. I had to have a job for that. And it wasn't until I went to Chicago to get my master's that I was completely on my own. And I had to, had to navigate how to do that completely, how to get that financial aid. I had to take out loans that I've mentioned before I will be paying for the rest of my life probably. And I didn't even go to an Ivy League school, until some elite school that cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. Still, I am indebted because I had to take out loans because my mom couldn't help me pay. And also something that really stood out to me, like throughout my college experience, especially when I was out on my own in Chicago, my mom couldn't help me. Like, she couldn't pay my rent when I was living in another city. She couldn't pay for my, I think sometimes she tried, and she'd call me and she'd ask. She also didn't know how I was doing. I was doing fine, by the way, but obviously as a parent, she worried. And so when we would talk on the phone, she'd ask me like, are you okay? Like, are you eating? Are you all that stuff? And I wasn't starving. I was fine. But I was working too. I had to take up a job, a part-time job while I was in school to pay for, you know, my rent, my food and transportation to get around. And I know she worried, and the most that she could do, you know, she called me when the day that the scandal broke and we were talking about it. And she was just like, I can't believe these people. And I can't believe these institutions took the money, because that obviously opens the door for things like this to continue happening. But it made me remember, like, the most that she could do, and I am so grateful for it, she would send me care packages. Like, she would send me a box, and my mom works at Walmart, and so she gets, you know, she finds the deals, and she's a big bargain person. She would send me a box with like toothpaste and like, you know, things that she found, that she was like, you know, a box of the tea that I like. And it was like, and I didn't need any of that. Like, I was obviously like, I paid for that stuff, but that's what she could do to help me. And she did it. Like, she obviously gave me the support, the emotional support that I needed for that stuff. But that was her idea of a financial support. And I am so grateful for that. But it does make me wonder, and I want to ask both of you guys, it makes me wonder if she had the money. Like, she always says, if I had the money, I would give you whatever, like, I'd help you, I'd pay for your school. But now it makes me wonder, would she cut corners? So do you guys think that your parents, had they had the money to like help you out more, do you think they would have cut corners, maybe like these parents did?
I don't really want to, you know, ponder how my parents would have reacted with it, had wealth, but I will comment on the system that's already built, that it's made for people with money to cut those corners, right? Like, I was listening to this great podcast, and it was saying in there that, you know, we have the front door to an institution, which is like everyone who has to apply, you know, go through the certain hoops, get the ACT, SAT, things like that. Then you got the back door. The back door is those who can sponsor a building, right? Like Ashton Kutcher, how he was able to get to his institution, his family donated $3 million, $4 million. That's for like the 1%. That's the back door. But then you got the side door. And this is where we talk about the 9%, the families right here, where they don't have, you know, that $3, $4 million to spend, but they have that $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 to spend. It's a side door. So already the system is not built for people like us. It's made for people to cut those corners from, you know, from legacy students to those who can afford to have their name on the building. It's made already with corners cut for them.
Yeah, I'll agree with you. I don't know what my mother would have done. I mean, I assume she wouldn't have, but you know, you never know in the moment. I think I couldn't help but think with all of this that's been going on in the news lately, that now institutions, they're not going to change. A lot of them are going to continue the same, but now how, I guess, to try to keep it on the down low, are they going to try to go, you know, are they even take a step further of like, okay, you know, they're going to continue taking money. And some of these people, unfortunately, call them corrupt, call them whatever you want to, they're going to still do this, because there's always that feeling that, all right, we're just not going to get caught. These people did, you know, we're just not. And the money's always going to be there, because it's not like tuition is going to lower anytime soon. It's not. It's going to continue going up. The other day, I had a conversation with somebody, and I had mentioned when I started in undergrad, for 12 credit hours, it was $1,200. Whoa. That was back at Weber State so many years ago. And one of the reasons I stayed at Weber to do my master's as well is because I didn't want to pay $30,000 for Michigan State or $25,000 for Clemson, you know, and now, you know, thank God I'm now tuition free. Like, I don't owe any student loans. Like, I'm done now. But that was because I stayed there. That was because I had to take advantage as well. Like, mm-hmm. I think that's one thing that early on, like, I try to tell students, at least I used to try to tell students when I was an advisor, like, definitely take advantage of some of these, you know, these situations. If you can work at the university, if, et cetera, things like that. I was fortunate enough that my mom worked at Weber State for over 20 years. Yes. So I got 50% tuition and I got my Pell Grant and FAFSA and all this stuff. And so, yeah, it made it pretty easy. But now, $1,200, I don't know if that's going to get you
6 credits.
Right? And that's so sad. And it just kind of makes me wonder now that, it's going to continue on, and I hope from within change could be made, whether it is from admins or whether it's from alumni who donate to the school, those people that maybe, you know, worked hard, are a little bit older and donate to the school or have that influence. Cause, you know, there's sometimes people there that, you know, they're maybe in that, like you said, 9% or 5% around there that kind of can influence it a little bit. Maybe they don't have the 3 mil to change the name of the building, but they can still call up the dean of whatever school and say, mm-hmm. Hey, you know what? We should open up this, or I feel like this program for these students needs to do that. At least that's my hope. That's a long shot, but at least that could be building blocks to begin some change.
I want to go back to this like school issue, because I know you mentioned that an education is an education, like no matter where you went. So Shoshua, you mentioned something too. You said that you stayed at Weber, you got your master's, and you could have gone to another school, an out-of-state school that maybe has more weight. Maybe people know the schools more over maybe Weber State, but you got an education and now you're working in a field that you enjoy and you, some would call you very successful. Like, Why do we put this?
Maybe.
That's another
Blessed. I've been blessed. That's enough.
Yeah, you made a smart decision in you know, you're debt free now. You paid for your education. It's done, and you are educated. You're an educated person. Yes, some people really would call you successful. But why do we put so much weight as a society? Why do we put so much weight on some schools over others? When at the end of the day, an education is an education, and a degree is a degree. And you know, someone who's happy or unhappy at their job, that's still someone who's there. But like, again, why do we put that weight on certain schools over others?
If I may, I think returning back to this, the reason why we're talking about this scandal, mm-hmm. right? The children of these very wealthy families don't really have to go to school. But the reason why they had a school is to not only give notoriety and access to those networks for the children, but because it means a little bit more to the parents. Oh, I'm a parent of a Harvard graduate. I'm a parent of a Stanford graduate, right? So I think back to this, it's about access, it's about networking. But for who? Not only the wealthy, but I want to add this other context, the white wealthy families, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because of this, these families are able to perpetuate the systemic classification of people who are elite and those who are the rest. So, I agree. Like, an education is an education wherever you go. But at the end of the day, for people who's famous, their well-being is rested upon the brand, and the brand are these schools nowadays.
I agree. And it reminds me of something that I think we talked about when we were thinking about the idea for this podcast episode, that we had said, like, you could wear whatever kind of pair of jeans or whatnot or a pair of shoes, but we want the Nikes, or we mm-hmm. want the insert whatever brand here. I mean, you could wear some other lesser brand, but it's still going to do the same thing. It's still going to get you from point A to point B, right? But we don't. We want something that's a little bit more notoriety. And I think it kind of, as weird as it sounds, it kind of similar things as well. We want that notoriety of my son or daughter went to Duke and studied medicine there mm-hmm. compared to whatever. But to your point as well, it's to gain that access. So, all right, my son or daughter is a Duke alum. So now there are a ton of Duke alums wherever mm-hmm. this region. Mm-hmm. Maybe he or she can get a job there and go from there. And then maybe we can make connections and et cetera, et cetera. It almost is like a wildfire. It just, once a little spark there, and then it just continues to grow and to grow and to try to get that connection. And for me, the sad part is that circle doesn't necessarily get bigger. You just become part of it. You're not spreading it out. You're just kind of there, because I've seen a lot of families who, once they get that kind of connection, I mean, I always feel like you should help out others, but they just kind of help the inner circle. They're not helping mm-hmm. those that might be outside the circle. Some do, but a lot of them, A lot of them don't, because they want to maintain that status. They want to maintain that sort of club idea that they have. Eva, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I guess I agree with both of you. And I also think it's like a community thing. Like, obviously, like these kids who got into these schools, obviously, they had that one up. Like, the parents helped them with that. But for those who didn't, you know, people who went to who got in on merit and maybe graduated from, let's say, Yale or Harvard or whatever, then now you're part of that community. And so now you're, and now remember that, you know, the whole saying, it's not what you know, it's who you know. Then that's when it really comes into play, because now you know other people who graduated from that school and who can connect you, like you said, Joel, to jobs and open certain doors for you. And that happens obviously at the Ivy League, but it also happens in our communities. Like if you know someone who went to the school that you went to, like I hear this in the newsroom all the time, like there's a group of journalists who went to Weber, and so you hear, go Wildcats. Like there's, everybody connects in that, you know, the people who are part of that community are now connected, and maybe you will help out a Weber alum at some point, maybe because they are a Weber alum, maybe because you feel they deserve it. But I think it's still, I mean, and this is, I guess this is a lighter sense of it, but it's, you're part of a community, and whether or not, obviously, like you should be part of that community based on merit, but the way our society works, unfortunately, sometimes you're part of that community and your foot's in the door, and then bam, all the other doors are open for you. And I don't think it's fair, but sadly it happens. And so, I mean, what can we do? I guess what do you guys think? I know you've said that it probably won't change, and other people are going to find a different way to open up these other doors or windows at this point now, but is there something that we can start doing now? Like even like, you know, like a little grain of salt, like what can we do for anyone listening, or for just, you know, us, what can we do to maybe change this? So maybe when we have our next generation, maybe they don't have to be faced with the same like injustices. I don't know. What do you guys think? Hmm. And there isn't a right or wrong answer. I don't know. I'm just kind of throwing stuff out.
No. That's fine. It's, yeah, it's tough, because there's a good amount of us. There's a good amount of us who are first generation who have already gone and been successful. I think all three of us, I would like to consider all three of us are successful. I think it's now a matter of, okay, like we're here, but now what do we do? And I think we're still in that stage of that now, what do we do? Especially for a lot of us whose parents maybe came in, whether it's in the 70s, in the 80s, or in the 90s, or even in the 2000s, whenever parents came over. So the first generation students, we're still trying to figure out, okay, so we're here. Like, I see you. Now what? But I think that now what we need to figure that out, and we need to figure it out really soon. Because the tuition, as we mentioned, is continuing to go up. Sometimes these groups are shunning nuestra gente. Mm-hmm. And we need to mobilize. I know that sounds really radical, but we do need to mobilize. But for me, I don't know about you guys, but for me, I just feel like we need to get together, and not necessarily as like the whole country, but even in nuestras comunidades, whether it's here in Utah or anywhere where you're listening to, that's where we need together. And we need to start saying, okay, our gente are not going to go to the university. And not just because they don't want to, or not because they're smart enough. It's because, yeah, part of it is financial. And also, nobody's teaching them the ropes how to do this. And it's not their parents' fault, because they don't know. We can't blame them. We can't put the blame on them. But we did it. We did it somehow, whether our parents helped us or not, or somebody else helped us while we were up there trying to figure it out. But now we need to take our education, you know, not just the formal education. We need to take our experience and give it to these students.
And what I would add is that this issue that is right in front of us has a lot of interrelated and intersecting issues. Education, or the right to access education, is related to wealth inequality, is related to just many different things that are impacting us. So one thing I would love to bring up to discuss further is affirmative action. Because now that, you know, even though I went to an open enrollment school, so everyone who applies can get in, I still got to be an advocate for affirmative action, because other bodies in other places depend on these tools to not make only sure that more bodies come in from different marginalized communities, but that more people can go back to those communities and continue to build their wealth. Another thing I would want to add is, like, we got to make sure as at least for me, like as a graduate with a master's, is I got to advocate for reparations for those individuals who have been systemically marginalized through racist policies, right? I got to advocate to make sure our trans people, our queer people are being allowed into these spaces, that people without the proper documentation can have a right to education, right? So I think now that as, at least for myself, that as a graduate, I have to not only talk about these things, but I have to advocate and hopefully, you know, talk to our policy people, do the activism, do philanthropy in order to engage our community to make sure that we continue to not only make it more accessible, but take down those barriers that limit people from the beginning.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think this is just kind of like a side thing, but I think social media plays a big role. And I think as far as like going, as far as like advocating, I think, I mean, I a lot of like anytime something breaks, I go on social media to see how people are reacting. And I get a lot of the conversation from people and I get a lot of different perspectives. And I feel like I learned something through that. People sharing their own experiences, people sharing things that, that they may know, people who work in education, people who don't, just kind of like sharing stuff on social media. And I feel like I get, I learn something from it, and therefore I can take other steps, or I can learn how to take other steps. And I think that, yeah, that's a good place. That's I mean, if that's all you have, that's a good place to start. Start sharing one of your own experiences. Like, don't be afraid to talk about that. And then also giving people something for sharing theirs, you know, letting them know they're not alone, and helping their stories get told, and advocating for what you believe. And I think social media, I don't want to say social media has the power to change anything, you know, but I think it does have the power to get the conversation going. And then maybe from the conversation, then maybe that's where action starts. And so I think social media is a really big place to start. That's kind of where I got like the idea to do this one. Obviously, like the scandal was one thing, but I just loved seeing all of the tweets and the Facebook posts of the first generation college community and sharing their own experiences, and just kind of opening the eyes to maybe people who are more privileged and don't understand what it's like to be less privileged, and what it was like to have to like pay for your own schooling, or what it was like to not be able to go to school because you couldn't pay for it. I think that for me, social media helped me out, and still helps me learn with like any other, any big thing that goes on. It's a good place to start, and it's a good place to start the conversation.
Some of the tweets that I found that were like very interesting. So this is from, you know, a tweet, and it was it's a hashtag college cheating scandal. It says, I remember when a girl in my high school told me I only got into college because I'm Latina and poor. Yet here are the white elite using their wealth to diminish any progress affirmative action has attempted to make. Another user, they said, this is what's most infuriating about the college cheating scandal. So many hardworking, deserving people don't make it because they don't have money or drown in debt, but say things on those of us who got diversity scholarship. Affirmative action is clearly the problem.
Yeah, here's one that I like kind of just really like touched my heart. I was at Carla_Estrada22. She said, when I got accepted into college, my parents gave me $200. My mom blessed them and grabbed my hand and crying said, "This is all we can give you. Please forgive us." The day I spent that money, I cried because I knew that was all they had for my education. Hashtag college cheating scandal. Another one from @Tusk81 says, shout out to all the children of immigrants who had to figure out college application forms, fees, financial aid forms, books, tuition on their own, because they knew the impossible burden it would be on their parents.
One thing I want to comment on that is that all that we lots of times talk about the fees and everything on the day of college, but also the college prep that many wealthy families can invest into the children's education is also very important to underscore. Because like, I'll be honest, I only took the ACT once and I was like, okay, like I think that's good enough. But I know there's tons of other people who get tons of courses, and if their parents not only invest in time with reading and everything from their college experience, but invest monetarily so they can, their child can go much farther than any other student can.
And not only that, but throughout the process, like some kids do get really good grades because they've been provided a tutor to help them for 2 to 3 hours every day with their homework, so they can learn a subject and excel at a subject, and not just like academically, but also you think of like artistically people. And I think also talent has something to do with it, but you can develop a talent through a mentor, through a tutor, through a coach, through a trainer, through all that stuff, when a lot of other people on the other side don't have that advantage. And like, I think both of you guys mentioned this, you know, your parents couldn't help you with your homework. And I had the same experience. I couldn't, and I don't blame my mom for that, but I had to figure it out. And if I didn't, you know, I had to use my own, like I had to find the time to study because I also worked, but I also had to like somehow understand something, and I had to figure out how to, like tutoring sessions at school that the school provided, and also I had to be in with enough time to make it to my job, because that's just what the situation was. I mean, I'm sure if my mom could have, she would have helped me with a tutor or something if she couldn't do it, but at that point, I mean, that's just what it was. That's just what my situation was. And I guess I don't regret my situation. I think maybe I was frustrated in the moment, but I look back now and I'm proud of where I came from and how I got to where I am. But I want to ask you guys, do you think your experiences shaped you? And if so, how?
Yeah, I do believe my experience has definitely shaped me. I did the best I could with the opportunity that I was given, or the challenges that I was given. Navigating and understanding myself, a brown body in a predominantly white institution, I had to understand how different, you know, norms were, how different languages were used. I would get frustrated, I'll be honest. And when I had a read and I just couldn't understand what they were trying to say, or I tried to make friends in different areas of the school, but at the same time, I didn't feel that closeness. And so for me, like, yeah, I feel who I am today was because of the sacrifices of my parents, was because of the challenges I had to go through. But I also know that if I had less challenges or I had more preparation, I could also be doing different things, even, or a different capacity, different magnitude. I don't want to compare myself with what could have been, but I definitely want to say, like, I probably would have had different opportunities now as opposed to where I am now. So, yeah, I am grateful to be where I'm at, and I'm grateful I overcame those challenges, not only by myself, but those around me. But there's definitely, like, that gap where, like, I wonder what I could have been.
I'm just grateful for my experience. I wouldn't change it for anything. Could I have paid more attention in high school? Yes. Could I have even graduated high school? Yeah, I probably should have graduated high school, but I didn't. I ended up getting my GED for that. But I'm grateful for the people that helped me get into to get into college. Everybody from, I know I told the story to Yvette, but I was going to go to, like, a smaller school just to get a certificate, and then I was going to do web page design. Mm-hmm. That was originally my plan, and I was a really bad kid as a teenager, and so I overcame that, and my mom was so proud of me that I had just gotten my GED. She told a colleague at her job and said, oh, I'm so proud of my son. He's going to go and get the certificate and do that. And it was this woman who I never met, only my mom has met her, said, well, why doesn't he come up here to the university? And then she gave my mom a card of the person in charge of the Hispanic center there, a lady by the name of Ana Gina Arroyo. And we made an appointment, and she did everything for me. She explained to me everything, because I had no idea. I'm like, I don't know anybody that's gone to college. Some of my older cousins, but they're in New Jersey. I don't even know what I'm doing here. I don't even know if I want to do this. And how much is it going to cost me? All those questions. I was a worried kid as well. And Anna Jane, God bless her, she was always like, it's not going to cost you anything because you have this, you have this. She explained it to my mom. She explained it to me. She made my whole schedule for my first year. She did everything. She went to the bookstore with me to go get my books, because I had no idea how that worked. Everything, all that. And she just kind of, after that, let me kind of go and be like, okay, here, like, just go. And I'm forever grateful for it. And I wouldn't change anything. And I think it's just our responsibility now that there's not a lot of people like Anna Jane around, you know, and it's our responsibility, because some people will say, well, you know, race, you know, it shouldn't matter as far as that. No, it shouldn't, but it does make a difference when you see somebody who's like you being like that. It does. Like, let's not be ignorant about it. It does make a difference. And the more that people, the new generation sees not only us, not only that we succeeded, because it's one thing that they see that we're successful, but it's another thing that we're successful and we're coming back to help them. That's a big difference. And yes, that's what we need to step up a lot more. Yvette?
Yeah, I agree. I think that, we should definitely give back. We should, you know, I think obviously it sounds like, you know, all of us had a different path, similar but different path, but we're all grateful for our path. And there were people along the way who did help us, whether it was our parents' sacrifices or mentors that we found along the way. They helped us. Everybody was a part of our journey and got us to where we are. And probably there's way more people that we'll run into that will also help us. But I think we also need to be those people. We need to reach out. And even if it's just one person that you have a conversation with, or someone that you reach out to on social media, again, I'm a big advocate for that. There's a big community there. I think even just sharing your story and telling someone, like you said, Shoah, like seeing yourself in someone else, or seeing a little bit of you in someone else, can help you. It can say, hey, that's possible. And I can do that. Or, you know, yeah, that's hard. It's hard for that person too. And yet they're still able to overcome that challenge. I think that's what's really important about sharing our stories. And I don't regret anything about my journey. I know that, like, I think back to, like, me maybe like 10 years ago, like 18-year-old me, and how, like, maybe frustrated I was about certain things. And, like, I wish I could tell her, like, hey, it's going to be okay. Like, you're gonna get this, and you're gonna be grateful for this experience. And so I'm proud now, and I wouldn't take any of it back.
I would like to just advocate one thing about community colleges. I think lots of this overlooks these different places where not only a bachelor's, but maybe like you were saying before, the certificates, the apprentices, the apprenticeships, and all that is very important and is part of the education system. And so working within a community college, I see how it's much more accessible for all types of students, from a non-traditional or like a person that's older than 26, maybe has children, married maybe, a full-time job, to those who are, you know, barely 18 and still living at home with their folks. Community colleges are one of the, I think, a better equalizer than these university utopians that we keep talking about. Because unlike universities where they can be their own city unto themselves, community colleges, they're in the community. Mm-hmm. And I think allowing people to understand, hey, a community college is just as great as a university, and honestly, cheaper, better access to great resources, and you can even get more a community experience. So I think that's something that this scandal kind of flies over, the accessibility to community colleges.
That's a really good point, because like you said, at the end of the day, an education is an education.
Absolutely. Can I say one thing that I wanted to bring up, but I was like, oh, I don't want it to be taboo as far as what the conversation.
Bring it up.
One thing I was going to say is like.
Bring it up.
There are some. I'm not trying to. I love
some
mi gente.
Capital S.
No, there are some. And there's like nuestra gente that when they make it, they sobilan. And I wanted to bring that up, but I just didn't want it to
bring
seem
it
like,
up. No, bring it up.
Like
cafecito caliente, por favor.
Because it's true. Like I've seen some, and it's not that I want to be necessarily a hater. Like I don't want to be like that. But at the same time, I don't know. For me, it's just like, not that you need to forget about me, but don't forget about where you came from. Don't forget about nuestra gente.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like that. And it's sad. And there's some, even family members that I can think of who it's like, yeah, they've had success, or their sons or daughters have had, like some of my cousins. Y ya se piensan que ya están
muy, 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 muy.
Yeah, and it's just like, qué pena que da. And not saying that can't never happen to any of us. Like, obviously, things change. I hope not. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I think eso para mí me da más dolor. Yeah. Si es un blanco, lo entiendo de una manera.
Los espera, you know, you're like, okay. No, but I think, if I may say onto that, like, I think me going through getting my undergrad, I definitely showed that to my parents. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a little time where I struggled and I was like, oh, me creo, yo soy más que ustedes porque tengo una educación y ustedes no, you know? And for me, it was I'll be very vulnerable. Like it was a coming to understanding of my privileges, of who I'm standing upon and where I'm at. And so for me, like, yeah, I think I've experienced where like there was time where it's like my mom and dad and myself will get in arguments and I'll bring that up. But then, like, as I kept growing, I was like, oh, no, like, I'm here because of them. Like, I don't need to be this gatekeeper. I need to be a gate greeter. You know, my dad will always say, you know, los Latinos son como los cangrejos. You know, you start bullying them and then one tries to get out. Instead of trying to all get out, then, you know, they pull them back in, you know. And like, for me, it's like, no, I don't want to be a cangrejo. You know, I want to be the great the gate greeter for more Latinos, like, you know, more different bodies so I can help them get to where I'm at or even more.
Yeah. Wow. And I think I think it's very natural to have like to react like that and to like feel like that for a moment. The important thing is that you got past it. And now you're like you said, you're a gate greeter. But like I remember I had this one like I never like I don't think I ever like thought of myself as like, oh, like I'm better. Like I didn't think of myself as I'd like to think that I never thought of myself as like better than like my mom or like, you know, other people in my community. But I did have like a really eye opening moment once. I used to work at a bakery, and then they had like the, you know, because there's like always a mix of businesses. So it was like a panaderia, and then there was like a notary office next door that I eventually moved to the notary office, and I was like a secretary, whatever. And there was this guy that would come in sometimes like it was really hard to communicate with him sometimes because sometimes he'd want an appointment and I'd be like, there are no appointments. Like I'd have to be like kind of stern about it because he'd just want one when he wanted one. And so sometimes like I got this like vibe and I'm just like, oh, I like this guy again. Like I remember I don't want to say I thought I was better than him, but I was just like I was annoyed by him and his presence sometimes. And one time he needed help with something. And so I told him he had to sign. Like I was like, OK, like I prepared the document or something. And I'm like, oh, you just have to sign right here. And he said he didn't know how. And when he said that, like, I felt like so bad for like ever being annoyed by him or forever like not wanting to help him. And I'm just like some, like it just kind of hit me that I'm like, some people's situations are just different. And like, maybe I'm lucky enough to have been born here and go to school and like get an education. But this guy, I remember he's from El Salvador, and like, I remember he didn't have that experience. And so like that moment just really like, it like slapped me with humility, like just kind of like, and so I helped him. Like I did help him sign his name because I knew his name, and so I helped him. But like the second he said that, I was just like, what? Like I got chills because like I was like, wow,
I'm getting chills.
People, yeah, like it was just it was just very like humbling, you know. And so now like I like sometimes you just like you're young and you just you think what you think and you can't help it, but then you grow up, you do mature, and you do become a better person. I like to think.
Those course correcting moments in life are so vital. Yeah. And so, yeah, I think we all have them. We just definitely heard you say that. But I think like it tells more about you recognizing that. And that's a problem with different people with wealth, I will say. With more wealth and when it's intergenerational wealth, you stop recognizing those course changing moments. And you just think of it, oh, well, why doesn't he learn how to sign then, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think it shows a lot. It tells me a lot about you for you being able to recognize it, your body, the, you know, the chills you got. Like you recognizing it, that tells us that we are still all connected to our community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Amen. Wow. Yeah. No, I didn't have anything to add. I'm just like, I felt like, damn, like I'm just thinking in my mind, like seeing, like picturing that moment.
Yeah.
And just like,
oh, I still picture his face and like, I can still picture him like, yeah, like just standing here because I was sitting down. It was like a thing. He was standing up. And so, yeah, at that point, it was like he was looking down. But yeah, it was just, yeah. So it's something I remember sometimes. Yeah.
Wow.
Well, thank you for sharing that.
No, that's one of those things that like need to tell everybody. Mm-hmm. Like, these moments happen. Yeah. And when they do, you need to recognize what it means. Mm-hmm. Instead of just kind of like what you said, oh, well, why doesn't he just, like, why didn't anybody teach him? Or why didn't he learn it himself? Mm-hmm. People, everybody's different. Yeah.
And I think a lot of it does also comes from like parenting. Like what your parents teach you.
Yes.
And like, yeah, like a lot of it is parenting. It's also like the world and people you surround yourself with. But like your parents are like, you are half of your parents, or like you're, you know, like, you know what I mean? But like, so how they teach you and like how they react to certain situations and how they like, and how you react to the way they react to certain situations, like that makes you who you are. And like that like sets the tone for like future generations too, I think.
That's why for those that don't maybe have a good relationship with their parents, or maybe didn't even know, or didn't even grow up with their parents, you know, even more blessings to them for that overcame that, because they didn't maybe had that. Or those people that grew up in foster homes and once they're 18, you know, they're out the system. That's tough. So anytime I hear those stories like that of somebody who's grown up, whether it's foster home or they grew up in and out of families' homes, they never had that person to actually do that. They had to learn it themselves more than we've said we've learned our things on our own. So it's a struggle. Well, that was the conversation for today. Thank you for joining us. And thank you also, Cristobal, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. We appreciate your insights. And where can people find you? Are you on social media?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am on Facebook. You can find me at my page, Cristobal, just Cristobal, or on Instagram, Cristobal.vjr.
All right. And don't forget for all you listeners to tell your friends to download and subscribe to KSL Capacito or anywhere where you download your favorite podcasts. And on social media, we are at KSL Capacito on Facebook or KSL Capacito on Twitter. For me, I'm at Joel Cardenas.
And I'm at Evie Cruz.
Thanks for joining us.
Ciao.
Bye.